Okay, you want me to give him a call after the program today?
Okay, yeah.
What time? I think he's in Lake Tahoe. I thought he was in Lake Tahoe. This is good for me. I don't think he's going to send us to prison. Good evening. This is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that will determine what the future will bring. I have to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They're my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers, and of course we welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. But Please hold your calls, at least for the time being. Hopefully we're going to have with us on the line very soon, Michael Trudeau, who certainly supports Radio Liberty, but we're going to hear a financial commentary about what's really happening financially in the United States and throughout the world. Interestingly enough, and I want to qualify everything I say by saying I am not a financial advisor. All I am is just a commentary on what I know and what I read and what I hear. Somebody sent me an email from Australia a few days ago saying that their Prime Minister, the Prime Minister of Australia, had been briefed on the coming financial crisis in the United States. He wanted to know if I was aware of that, and I wrote back and told him I certainly was well aware of it, because, after all, Paul Volcker, no less than Paul Volcker, the former chairman of the Federal Reserve Board, long-time member of the Council on Foreign Relations, long-time affiliate of Chase Manhattan Bank, certainly one of the most powerful men in the world, and whenever they have the meeting of the central bankers over in Basel, Switzerland, there at the Bank for International Settlements, he is there. And, of course, my good friend Joan Vian talked to him last time that they attended the meeting and asked him what was going to happen as far as the financial system was concerned. And his remark to her was, we really didn't do a very good job with it. We're going to have to come up with a new system. And, ladies and gentlemen, I think that they're planning on collapsing our system and coming up with a new system. And when that happens, why, the people who are tied into dollars, increments, whether it be bank accounts or annuities or pension funds or CDs, or it really doesn't matter, why they are going to simply be wiped out. This happened. I was talking to a gentleman from Rhodesia just today, where, of course, when he lived in Rhodesia, it was three American dollars to one Rhodesian dollar, that today it's 7,000 Rhodesian dollars for one American dollar. And the people who are getting their pensions, they're getting just a few cents on the dollar. People who put their money in the bank while a man had sold his house, came back 15 years later when he took the money out of the bank and wouldn't buy groceries for a week. This is really what's going on today. Could this happen in the United States? Of course it could. For as certainly Paul Volcker said, talking about what's really going on today and the coming financial crisis, he doesn't know whether it's going to come with a bang or with a whimper, whether it's going to be sooner or later, but under all circumstances, there is going to be a financial crisis, or he thinks there's going to be a financial crisis coming, because there's no incidence in all history where a nation has spent 6% more than it's taking in year after year, and pretty soon the rest of the banks in the world, the central banks of the world, will tire of taking American dollars. Now, this is one of the central bankers, so he knows what's going on, and with us is Michael Trudeau. Michael, how are you tonight?
I'm wonderful, Stan. How are you?
Well, what do you think about what's going on?
Well, there's a lot that I think about what's going on, and obviously there's been some strengthening of the dollar. And there's some speculation that we'll find out tomorrow, I think, whether or not that's going to continue. But yeah, it looks like the dollar has been strengthening, and the aspect as to why that's happening is a lot of people thinking that it's the United States manipulation.
Hold that thought just a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty. Our guest is Michael Trudeau, and Michael commenting that the dollar appears to be going up, and he suspects that there's a lot of manipulation going on behind the scenes, and, well, I think they're absolutely. I think everything is being manipulated. I think the unemployment statistics are manipulated, and they're lying to us. I think the inflation statistics are manipulated, and they're lying to us. And I think, of course, well, I'm going to let Michael tell you,
well, you
what
know,
he thinks. Go ahead.
You bring up the inflation statistics, and that's one of the ones that's so easy to point out that they're lying to us, because, again, you see the inflation rate at, what, 3%, 4% here and there. And, you know, one only needs to look at the dollar's buying power. And, again, I've talked about this, but Good Morning America even pointed out about 6 weeks ago, dollar lost 25% of its buying power in 2 years, 12.5% annually. And that literally means that in a year's time, you've lost $12.50 from every $100 buying power that you had. That's real-term inflation. That's real-term loss of your buying power. So if they tell you it's 3% or 4%, obviously that's quite a lie. It's interesting because while we look at the fact that the Fed, you know, is basically in an overconfident stance at best, and that's if we assume that they're not lying about this aspect, that the U.S. deficits can be left alone to adjust themselves, this is a very large cause for concern. And again, although the dollar has recently been showing some strength and stability, this is something that's probably due to manipulation, but also due to profit-taking. And it's quite likely the pause in the dollar's downtrend is just a factor of some very widespread profit-taking, as opposed to the dollar regaining the confidence of the markets. And as such, there's still a high probability the dollar's downtrend will resume later in the year. You might note that Warren Buffett, for certain, is one that is still very adamant that he wants to be short dollars. So again, here's, you know, one of the most premier investors out there saying, hey, I'm going short dollars. How about you?
Well, I really think it's so interesting that if you look and see what's happening, the Chinese are dumping dollars from their central bank. The Japanese are dumping dollars from the central bank. The Finns certainly unloaded a great amount. And suddenly there are all these mysterious, buyers coming in from the Cayman Islands or some of the down in the Bahamas. Nobody knows who they are, but mysteriously, they are simply buying up our debt,
right.
You know. And a lot of people think it's basically not foreigners at all.
Yeah.
The government is buying its own debt, and of course is doing that with money they create out of nothing, which is highly inflationary. What are your thoughts?
Mysterious Caribbean group. Yes, we've noted that. John and I have been talking quite a bit about that mysterious Caribbean group that's been buying up the dollars. You pointed out that the Asians have been dumping dollars, and it's interesting to see that because it's where they're putting their dollars, and you can see where they're putting their dollars because of the gold demand there. And again, it's just booming across the board, and especially
right there. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and our guest this evening is Michael Trudeau, who's certainly a very articulate spokesman about what's going on today. And we were simply talking about the fact that, you know, as the Chinese and the Japanese central banks over this last couple of months have been dumping American dollars and reducing their American dollar holdings, that they seem to be being purchased by some mysterious purchasers, some people with unlimited funds of money coming in from the Cayman Islands and the Bahamas. And, of course, it would appear that this is really our own government buying up our own debt. You know, it's what it is, basically. They are creating more money out of nothing, which is highly inflationary and simply setting us for, what happened in France in the 1716 when John Law was allowed to print money without any restriction and collapsed the economy of France, and it happened in the United States in 1776 when the Congress printed the Continental Dollar, and it happened in France again in 1789 when they tried the same concept of printing fiat money. In fact, Aristotle saw the same thing happen to destroy Greece when he said there's absolutely nothing wrong with fiat money as long as you have perfect intelligence and godlike wisdom for kings, in kings. And, of course, who really believes we have godlike wisdom in our leaders today? So certainly if the government is buying its own debt, I mean, this is really highly inflationary, isn't it?
Absolutely. And, again, when you start to see where they're raising their interest rates, you look to, you know, to the future for inflation here, and this is where it's going to come down to the big thump, and that is we're literally raising these interest rates to a level eventually where most people who got on those floating arm mortgages are going to be priced right out. They're going to have to give up their houses, and at that point, all of the wealth or property goes again to the Federal Reserve and the central banking cartel, and the guys who floated those great big loans go back to square one. It's wonderful to watch this cycle go over and over and over and over. But again, Stan, you pointed the fact the Asians are dumping the dollars, and I wanted to point out where they're putting their money.
Where are they putting it?
Because gold demand is exploding across the board in Asia and China, but also in India, Turkey, in the entire Middle East. Rising premiums, just for note on that, rising premiums for gold bars in Asia are a very good sign of just how strong the physical market is. China's gold market is also opening to retail investors now at a very fast pace. China Construction Bank has started offering a bullion service to retail investors, and other large state-open or large state-owned banks, rather, are planning to follow suit. In addition, the public can now trade gold over the Internet with some Chinese banks. With the retail and investment market gaining momentum in China, the long-term impact on physical demand should be fairly significant. So for the relative high price of gold, the relative high price of gold there has not deterred any consumer buying, and I don't see that slowing down at all.
What's happening as far as India concerned? Because you're talking well over a billion people there, you know, and of course the people in India are getting more and more money. After all, we're outsourcing our jobs over there. We're sending our answering services over there, and so often today, why we'll get people calling here. They want to sell us something or get us to refinance our home, and they all have that strong Indian accent. You know very well. These are telephone banks. Over in India, and of course they're doing even routine telephone answering service over there. They're certainly sending over our computer jobs, they're sending over our engineering jobs. So the living standards are beginning to rise for the Indian people as they gradually begin to drop here in the United States, part of a long-range plan for equality throughout the world, at least for the common folks, not for the fabulously rich who are engineering this whole program. But what's happening with India as far as their gold buying is concerned?
Well, they're obviously pulling it in huge amounts. And again, you point out that they're making all this money due to the fact we're outsourcing our jobs. Well, it's what they're doing with the money. Because again, when you go to countries like, you know, any Asian country, basically, but most of them, and certainly India is a big one to be noted, is these people understand fundamental economics, and they understand what real money is. They understand that when they're making this money that's coming into them, this is a boon, and they're putting it right into something that they know is stable. They're putting it into gold, and they understand physical possession gold. So again, we're going to see some pretty strong demand, I think, breaking out for gold, at least physical possession in the short term here.
And I really think people really here in the United States do not understand what people in other countries know. And that is, of course, that when you have a fiat money system, it always collapses. In fact, there's a wonderful, wonderful quotation from Daniel Webster, who said, "Of all the contrivances for cheating the laboring classes of mankind, none has been more effective than that which deludes them with paper money." And that's really what it's all about. It's a delusion. You think it has some value because it's got green ink on it and it's got a number on it, and right now it'll buy things. But every year it buys a little less, and probably before long, every few months, it'll buy a great deal less. And right now we are in the just massively increasing the monetary supply. The federal government, as far as I can see, is manipulating the stock market along with some of the big stock brokers and some of our major banks. And they're pouring in countless billions of dollars, according to Bob Chapman. They're putting in something like they've got $70 or $80 billion that they're using to manipulate the stock market to keep it from collapsing. But how long can they keep doing that?
That's a very good question. Again, that's only going to come down to whether or not the people will fall in line and believe exactly what they're seeing. And, you know, the fact is that there's this big mysterious shroud around everything, and folks don't really understand how it works. And you know, again, it seems like it's so fundamental. I know it certainly is to most of your listeners, Stan, but you have to realize that outside of your listeners, there's a large group of the population that understands very little about how this all works. You can walk right into any major city and start asking folks right on the street, "Hey, who owns the Federal Reserve?" And, you know, 99 out of 100 are going to tell you the U.S. government owns the Federal Reserve System. So again, you have to realize that this is a very small segment of the population that you talk to or that I talk to in a day that understands this, and because of that, they can get away with this forever.
Well, who does own the Federal Reserve Bank?
Well, the Federal Reserve Bank and the Central Cartel is basically owned by private individuals. You can start naming names, of course, and run right down the list, but the more notables, of course, the Rockefellers and Rothschilds, and have been doing this basically systematically stealing our property and our wealth and our labor from us since 1913 when the Act was passed.
And I think it's so important for people to understand the Federal Reserve is a privately owned central bank. It's privately owned, and just as all of the central banks, the first central bank of the United States was privately owned. And of course, at that time, why a great deal of the stock was bought up by English investors, which is one reason why Congress refused to renew the charter in 1811. And of course, that got us into the War of 1812, because you don't defy the international banking cartel. And then the second bank of the United States was created in 1816. And what happened? Why, of course, it was stock was bought by people in the United States, but over a third of that was bought by European bankers, and that was one reason why Andrew Jackson opposed the Second Bank of the United States, and why, of course, he refused to renew the charter, which, of course, created all sorts of problems here in the United States, because when you defy these people of great wealth, when you try to be an independent government, when you try to do what's best for the people, why they will bring the power of international finance to crush anyone stands in their way. Well, right now, of course, why we are in real financial problems, because we've been inflating the money steadily since 1913. And, of course, there is absolutely nothing behind our money other than the integrity of the people in Congress. And the tragedy is they are simply spending as if there's no tomorrow, and may very well be there will be no financial tomorrow for so many of the people listening to this program.
Well, I'll tell you what, you bring up one thing that really sits well, and that is, of course, you don't oppose these people because, again, you brought up Jackson. Well, Kennedy tried to repeal the Federal Reserve Act as well. Look what that got him.
And I really think people have to understand that he was going to actually issue silver-backed currency. And we have the executive order that that he signed, and it wasn't very long after that that, of course, they sent him on a trip to Dallas. And there can be very little question at all. That
it always comes down to follow the money, doesn't it?
Right, it really does. Well, let's talk a little bit about some of the things that are happening. We've got a tremendous housing bubble, and right now, of course, even here in California, the prices of houses continue going up, and all on the West Coast and the East Coast. But so many of these mortgages are held by something called Fannie Mae, which is at least has been in the past, a federally backed mortgage company. I don't know whether there's still federal backing behind it now, but I hear that, you know, this fellow Sushi down there in Birmingham, he was his piker. He only inflated the value of his company about $2 or $3 billion, whereas Fannie Mae has inflated the value of their holding about $11 billion, and nobody's going to go to jail for that.
No.
But the difficulty is that for every quarter point I just got this today from Marty Weiss, that for every quarter point the interest rate goes up, why Fannie Mae loses $500 million. And of course the interest rate goes up a half a point every few months, and every time it goes up half a point, why they lose $1 billion. And pretty soon you can't keep doing that indefinitely.
No, and again, you know, this is one of the things that when people, you know, say, why are you so big on gold? What's the big bullish, you know, push for gold? I always point out the fact that, number one, it's, of course, real money. It's been real money for 5,000 years. You can't say that about any paper. And two is, it's never going to be like that. You're never going to have to worry about, you know, gold being put in jail or suffering a lawsuit in some, you know, heinous corporate scandal like Enron or anything like that. So, again, yeah, that's one of the major reasons I back gold as big as I do, because it is the safest thing that I can own to protect my wealth. People say, well, aren't you looking for money? Aren't you trying to make big money in the stock market like everybody else? Well, you know, yeah, I got to tell you, I have, and I have made some money in the stock market, and I've got money in the stock market right now. But certainly, to say that I, you know, would put all of my eggs in that basket, it would be a very foolish misnomer. I put most of my eggs in gold before I would do that.
Well, I think Richard Mayberry is one of the smartest observers that I know, and recently he said something I thought was very wise. He said, when you've got a solid currency, invest and speculate. When you have a fiat currency with nothing behind that's unstable, be in fixed assets of one sort or another. Because when the currency collapses, and fiat money currencies always do collapse, why, first, at least you may not make anything at all, but at least you'll save what you spent your life working for. Well, we're going to be back here in just a moment with Michael Trudeau. We'll welcome your calls at 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty. Our guest is Michael Trudeau, and we're basically talking about what's happening financially. And certainly we find one of the greatest corporations in America, General Motors, their stock has suddenly become junk. In other words, they could not rate the value of the currency, the bonds lower. They're going to be paying 10 or 11% interest rate on those bonds right now, and probably by next year, 13%. And since they owe, General Motors has an outstanding debt of about $280 or $290 billion. If you've got to begin refunding that at refinancing that at 13, 14% interest, you've got to make an awful lot of money, you know, to meet your interest payments. And the trouble is that General Motors is losing money. They lost $1 billion this last quarter. How long can you keep doing that?
Not very long, especially when you look at the SUVs sitting all over the showroom floors. And nobody buying them these days. And the reason being, of course, you got oil breaking that $50 a barrel plus status, pushing gas over $2 a gallon. And the speculation, and you hear the speculation not coming from, you know, just general Joe Public, but people like Goldman Sachs were making statements like, we fully expect oil to hit $105 a barrel. Well, I can't imagine the SUV sales are going to go up as the price of oil does, as the price of gasoline does. So I think that, you know, GM is really going to be in some sorry shape here for quite a while. I don't see them pulling out of this anytime soon either.
Well, I think that this General Motors is in real trouble. Ford is in real trouble.
Sure, don't mean to just pick on GM.
And, of course, the thing is that they are, everything they're doing is based upon debt. And General Motors has been borrowing money to build plants throughout the world, but it's all done on borrowed money. They've got, I think, maybe $20 billion sitting in the bank, but they owe something like $17 or $18 billion to their pension fund. And if the stock market goes down, they're going to owe an awful lot more to that pension fund. And we're already hearing now, increasingly, that more and more of the corporations are beginning to default on their pension funds and turn the responsibility over to the Pension Benefit Guarantee Corporation. And I think that certainly the pension funds are going to be just sort of like a big albatross around the necks of a lot of our major corporations, aren't they?
I agree, and I think the Pension Guarantee Corporation is going to end up being, you know, another Social Security Administration situation whereby, hey, look, we thought we could handle this, but we didn't realize this many companies were going to be defaulting at this level or at this pace. And again, you know, you're going to see the government end up defaulting on that as well.
And of course, what
you know,
that
it's not like
do,
they can create all that money.
But what that will do is impoverish so many of the older people that have been really anticipating they're going to get that pension for the rest of their life like they've been promised, and the health benefits they've been promised. And but promises, sort of like Henry Kissinger's word, you know, a promise from a major corporation in $5 will buy a cup of coffee anywhere in the world.
Well, and the other thing, too, is that you start looking at the IRS, for instance, stepping in and saying, well, look, we've got all these loopholes. Let's start plugging some of those. The Fed comes in and says, yeah, by the way, we've noticed that there's a bankruptcy issue. Let's cover that. Hey, you know, these bonds, they used to be a floating rate. Let's fix those now since the interest rates are rising so that we don't get banged on that end of it. And you can just see as they put this house of cards into effect so they can get ready to pull that last card out at the end and you know, drop the whole thing. Yeah, I don't know if you caught this or caught any of the attention to the stealth tax, because that's coming up onto the Senate's horizon. But unless Congress acts, millions are going to end up having to pay this alternative minimum tax that was intended originally only for the wealthy. Are you familiar with that at all?
Well, I certainly am. Of course, if anybody really believes it was only for the wealthy, they probably believe the income tax will never go over 3%, and that was only for the wealthy, too. We'll be right back with Michael Trudeau. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here. Our guest this evening, Michael Trudeau, and our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. That's 464-8295. And Michael is certainly one of the better informed people that we get here onto our program to talk about what is really going on in the world financially. Do you have a telephone number you'd like to get out there, Michael?
Sure, I do. We've got information that we can send out to people that would be, we'd be happy to do it. The number is 800-685-4042. And generally, you know, folks can stop by the website as well, Stan, which is colonialresources.com, and read up, you know, on all these articles and stuff that we talk about on the program today.
All right, give that telephone number twice. You always give the number twice, Michael. You know that.
Sure.
You've been doing radio longer than I have.
It's 1-800-685-4042.
All right. And we'll get that up one more time later on. If you're out there in the listening audience, you have a question or comment, why, give us a call. But I really think that, at least I hope that the people who listen to our program will begin getting everything into a proper perspective, because you cannot have indefinitely a fiat money system. In fact, there was a wonderful article that I got out of the Encyclopedia Britannica, and basically it just talked about the whole idea of a fiat money system, and it said in effect that it is the indisputable lesson of history that sooner or later, and usually sooner, all paper money declines in quality. Representative money becomes credit money. Credit money becomes fiat money. And fiat money becomes the epitome of worthlessness. And remember, of course, what Aristotle said, there's absolutely nothing wrong with fiat money. As long as you have a perfect management and godlike wisdom in kings. Well, let's go, of course, we've got Sam calling from Toronto and then Jack from Michigan. So let's go to Sam from Toronto. Hi, Sam. How are you doing? How are things up there in Canada?
Hi, I'm sorry.
How are things up in Canada?
Oh, pretty good, pretty good. Dr. Stan, I just wanted to say, first of all, I only recently found out about your show maybe a week ago, and I'm very thrilled. It's a great program, so keep doing it.
Well, thank you so much.
And we're really, things aren't a whole lot different in Canada but we're than they are in the U.S., but we're really starved for real news because we get nothing but propaganda through the official channel. So anyways, thank you again for your program.
Well, thank you. You know, you can hear us 4 hours a day on the shortwave and 5 hours on the, certainly on the internet, and actually 5 hours on satellite. So you get the word out up there in Toronto because, you know, basically, we're all in this together, and if America goes down, so does Canada, and we have a common heritage of freedom.
I agree. Yeah, our goose is cooked, too.
Right.
So, anyways, I had a question for your guest. Very just practical questions about how, I mean, most people don't really have a whole lot. I, myself, am looking at a little bit of savings, and I could buy a newer automobile, and because... You know, I frankly need one. But the thought that I have is it just better in general to try to buy some more fixed assets, like, for example, an automobile? I mean, that's going to be a depreciating asset. But should people try to move their money out of currencies and move them more into fixed assets? I guess that would be the first question.
All right, fine. How would you respond to that?
General rule of thumb is, you know, anything that you're putting into a fixed asset is a better thing to own. I mean, again, anything you have in paper is going to be, to some level or another, inflationary. Again, this is a little bit different situation because you're in Canada, but right now we're losing down here 12.5% annually, where it used to be in my neighborhood, because I grew up in Minnesota, right on the border with Canada, right on the border with you guys, and, you know, it used to be the old joke, and it's not even a joke, it was literal, that if you had a Canadian quarter down here, they wouldn't accept it at the store.
Right.
And that, of course, is basically because it wasn't worth much. Well, nowadays, it's almost the exact reverse of that that's happening, and you start to kind of hope you get lucky enough to stumble into the Canadian quarter now. But again, getting back to the actuality, it's 12.5% decline in our dollar. So basically, unless I've got an instrument that's paying me over 12.5% annual interest, I'm losing my buying power. People would be, you know, impressed at an 8% level on a stock fund or something portfolio. And look at that as a wonderful thing until they realize they're losing 12.5 annual buying power. It's still a loss.
And so what would you suggest that Sam should think about doing?
I agree with what you were thinking before, Sam. Go with fixed assets. I would, you know, consider gold because, again, it's the best fixed asset you can put your fingers on. Easy to hide this stuff. If the government wants to confiscate my land, it's going to be hard for me to hide that.
Thank you very much.
All right, fine. Thanks so much, Sam.
Thank you.
And let's go to Jack calling from Michigan. Hi, Jack. How are you doing? You're going to have to hang on here because we're going to a break, but we'll talk to you, right? You're going to have to speak up a little louder, though.
All right.
Okay, hang on there. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay. Our guest this evening is Michael Trudeau, and we've got Jack from Michigan. Jack, go ahead.
Yes, Dr. Stan. JFK did sign an executive order June of 63, and for the silver certificates being printed, I understand some of them, I forget how many, I think it was $250 billion was supposed to have been put into circulation. By executive order. And then 10 days before the CIA murdered him, he stated that he would disband the CIA into 1,000 pieces and scatter it in the wind before he left office. So, I think it's as appropriate today as it was then, but more on point, Mr. Trudeau mentioned the purchase of gold, and if I'm not mistaken, Warren Buffett bought a huge holding in silver, and I don't know if that was silver coins or silver
bullion.
Bullion, okay.
He bought it, I've forgotten how many. He bought about a third of the world's supply, but this was some years ago. But apparently, he's got it stashed away someplace out of this country. He took it out of the United States, but he has a very large position now, where he is leveraging the dollar. In other words, he's betting against the dollar. He has derivatives, or he's bought contracts, which are probably a 10-to-1 margin, and he's got something like over $20 billion bet against the dollar. He lost $300 million on that last year. But he's holding his position because he thinks the dollar is going to go down. That's what Warren Buffett thinks.
Well, wondering, Dr. Stan and Mr. Trudeau, if it wouldn't be most useful for or purposeful of people, common people, to purchase silver coins that could be utilized as money, whereas gold, I think, would be a more difficult medium of exchange.
All right. What are your thoughts on that?
Sure. There's several thoughts of on that one. You bring up a good point here. You do. A couple of aspects of silver is this. Silver is an industrial metal, not necessarily a monetary metal, where gold is specifically a monetary metal. Mm-hmm. GDP numbers came out a while back. They were pretty negative, showing that industry was going to be down. And because of that, literally within a two-day period of time, we saw silver drop 40 cents an ounce, which is pretty significant. Now, the reason that I bring that up is only to point out that as far as a store of value is concerned or buying power is concerned, that silver may not be that for you. I think that if it comes down to a barter economy, that silver certainly will be exchanged as a barter medium. There's no question about that. I would point to the other aspect that makes me shy away from it in any bulk amount, and that is its weight. Because, again, if I look at roughly about 5,500...
Hold that thought right there. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest this evening is Michael Trudeau. We have Jack calling from Michigan, and Jack was asking about silver. And Michael was saying that he thinks that there might be reasons not to go with silver as much because he feels that the weight is a problem. Well, go ahead and give the explanations why
right.
You think that gold is a better investment than silver.
Right. We know that gold will hold its buying power. Where we can't make that claim about silver as a barter exchange, I think we'll probably be safe in assuming that it will be used as a medium of exchange. But again, it comes to me down to the weight issue, and I want to point it out like this. About $5,500 worth of silver today, on today's market, and junk silver, pretty good way to get it, is about 55 pounds. You're looking at a couple of ice cream pail-sized containers of silver. If you literally are in a barter economy, we have to assume that we might be under martial law or some type of anarchy in the streets, and if that's the case, we have to get out of Dodge in any kind of a hurry. I don't want to be the guy with the 55-pound backpack. I'm the slowest guy in the neighborhood now. Having said that, I realize that having silver is a good idea for the medium exchange because it's smaller increments and smaller value, but I also know that if I've only got the gold coins and I have very little or no silver and they're using silver, I can always barter some of my gold for silver in the way that I might walk into a 7-Eleven today with a $100 bill and want to buy a pack of chewing gum for 25 cents. They'll be able to make change for me.
All right, fine. So anything else you'd like to ask, Jack?
Yes. Dr. Stan and your guest, what would happen if a groundswell of Americans demanded the restoration of the gold and silver standard as the Constitution warrants? What would actually happen to the economy? Because I brought that up recently in a discussion with a person I met standing in line, and he just thought it was the craziest idea because he thought it would most certainly cause the economy to crash.
All right. What would your response be?
Well, basically, it would be the savior of the economy. I mean, there's no question. If you went back to the gold and silver standard right now, and our money was made out of gold and silver, and Congress was regulating the value, I think we would be able to literally step back and say, here comes that four-day work week we were promised.
I really think, Jack, that you're absolutely right that there would be some very, very difficult times, but there got to be difficult times. And the only question is, do you want to have difficult times and lose your freedom, or do you want to have difficult times and have a free monetary system that cannot be controlled by a group of very powerful people, because their plan is a cashless society where they will control you from the cradle to the grave. Which would you rather have, a controlled economy and the loss of all freedom, or some difficult times for a short while and maintain your freedom?
And Jack, let me ask you this. I mean, do you own your own house right now?
Yes.
Do you? Okay, you're one of the really rare individuals that owns their own house. Most people have their house owned by the bank. And having said that, those same people work very hard, and I'm sure you work very hard, Jack, but you're going to be a little bit different in this equation. Most people work really hard, 40-hour week, 50-hour week, and both the husband and wife have to work, and they're gaining no ground here, none whatsoever. So the reason that, of course, is happening is because their labor is being stolen by this central banking cartel who is illegally printing currency and manufacturing or setting the value thereof. Basically, they're stealing all of the property of the nation and all of the labor. Having said that, I would certainly go through any hardships in the beginning that might be caused by going back to a gold and silver standard.
I see. Well, you know, Dr. Stan, every day I direct as many people as I need to your program.
God bless you. Thanks very much, Jack.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Let's go to Arlene calling from Santa Cruz. And again, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. Hi, Arlene. How are you?
Yes, I have a couple of questions.
All right, you go ahead. That's what we're here for.
When you say physical gold, are you talking about bullion, or are you talking about coins?
Okay, you're talking about bullion or coins. Yeah. You're talking about depositing it in somebody else's bank someplace.
I definitely would not recommend depositing it into anybody's bank. When I say physical possession, what I mean is you keep it with you at your home.
Okay, is it coins?
Yeah, I would recommend coins because they're a little easier to move around than bars would be.
And you buy the gold coins at the bank that they have. Are they all gold, or are they just gold-plated?
Well, it depends on what we're talking about. But, you know, you can get certain gold coins at the banks and certain banks. And, again, those are the U.S. Eagles generally, and it's a bullion product. I don't necessarily recommend the bullion products for a couple of reasons. One is that they don't necessarily transact privately, so there's government reporting requirements on the purchase, whether you're, you know, depending on what your motivation is. Privacy is a pretty big one to me. And the other one, of course, is that if the government ever decides to call in the gold again, the bullion-type coins are the things they would come after.
Yeah, they would know where they
right.
are.
Well, you can still own coins, and you can still own bullion-type coins for about the same price. If you get into certain issue coins like the modern commemorative series, it's legally classified as collector's coins, so they trade privately without government reporting requirements,
mm-hmm.
and they can't be confiscated. But mm-hmm. they trade for roughly about the same price as the bullion coins do.
So you're talking then... And I'm calling from the aspect of the ordinary person. And I have this question, a hypothetical one, actually. Assuming that I have anywhere from $500 to $1,000 in my savings account, all right? And I put it into the physical possession of, I guess, from what you're saying, it almost has to be a collector's type coin.
Well,
yes. To keep it in my home.
Yes, but when I say the collector's type coin, you know, in your case, I assume that it's going to be for protection purposes. You're not buying to make a profit.
Right.
Okay, you're not a speculator, and that's not being the case. You buy the lowest grade collector's coin, in other words, the coin that will give you the most gold for the dollar,
mm-hmm.
and yet still trade privately and be exempt from confiscation. And currently, the $10 Olympic modern commemorative coin is the coin that will give you the most gold for the dollar and still trade privately and be protected from confiscation.
I see. Now, let's talk, say, within the next 30, 40 days, and hypothetically I already own quite a few of these $10 coins. And I'm the ordinary person who uses their savings account to pay for unexpected major expenses, particularly car repairs.
Yeah.
And assuming that I have a $500 car repair that I'm looking at, and I don't know whether my mechanic is going to
No, here's your question.
Accept the $10
right. Right. I agree. First off, keep it in cash in your instance and what you're asking. I'd keep that money in the bank in cash. Since you're using it for, you know, emergency events
right.
that come up. And the reason I say this is because if you want to, you can certainly liquidate the gold coins in order to get, you know, the cash again to pay your mechanic, but then you've got the lag time of sending the coin in, getting the check issued back out to you, which can be as long as 10 days time, and that's a long time to go without a vehicle.
Yeah, and is there a possibility that might, gold has gone up and down in the past, and is there a possibility that if you would pay, say, buy the $10 coin, that there's a possibility maybe at some point in time that you're not going to get the $10 for that particular.
Well, the $10 gold coin today sells for about $260.
Mm-hmm.
So right now the value is $260 of buying power for that gold coin.
Okay.
So today if I have $260 and I buy that gold coin, well, I can buy that gold coin with my $260, or I could buy perhaps, half of the money necessarily for a stove. All right?
Yeah.
Now, it doesn't matter what happens to the gold coin as far as the dollars are concerned, because the buying power of that coin won't change. So I'll always be able to buy half a stove with that gold coin. If I've got two of them, I've got enough for a stove. Now, if the gold goes up and down in price, won't really matter. The two coins will always buy the stove. What we're talking about as far as the barter purpose, though, is if it came down to the dollars collapsed and there were no more dollars, nobody was accepting dollars, what would you use then in order to buy anything, including
the repair for
the car? Then at that point, yes, your mechanic will happily take the gold coin because he can exchange it to anybody else for anything he may need.
Okay, I hope that answers your question, Arlene. But
yeah.
The thing is that when you're investing, you want to invest money that you're not going to need for everyday purposes. You've got to have money to live on. These are investments for security. But, of course, you can't take the money you need to live on.
A lot of us don't have that kind of money to invest for
security. This is the real problem that we have today. They are going to impoverish the American people. In fact, if you read the Earth Charter, you will find out that is the plan. Of course, to redistribute the wealth not only within nations, but between nations. You can get the Earth Charter off the Internet. We can send you a copy. It's written by the people who rule the world. They carry it around in something called the Ark of Hope, the occult counterpart of the Ark of the Covenant. It's written by three occultist people deeply involved in the occult side, and they want to redistribute your wealth, and they're in the process of doing it. That's what we've got to get the information out.
Yeah.
And that's the Earth Charter, point 10 of the Earth Charter, written by that great American patriot, Mikhail Gorbachev, by Marie Strong, who's a Canadian multi-billionaire,
yeah.
And, of course, by Nelson Rockefeller's son, Dr. Stephen Rockefeller. Hey, thanks for calling, Eileen.
All righty.
Barbie. And let's go to Darren, who's calling from Washington, D.C. Hi, Darren. How are you doing?
Good evening. I'm doing well, thanks.
Yeah, do you listen to our Saturday program back there?
I'm a new listener, just like your other caller here in the recent week.
Okay, fine. You're going to have to speak just a little bit louder.
I'm a new caller here.
All right, fine. Well, I hope we get you hooked listening. So, do you have a question for our guest?
I do. I wanted to ask about the production of money, and specifically about the U.S. Mint, because whenever I tell people about our banking system, they always say, well, the money is, printed in the U.S. Mint, and having been raised here in Washington, they took us all down on the field trip there to see the money being made at the U.S. Mint.
It's actually at the Treasury Department prints it at the Mint, right.
And so I was wondering how that fits into the whole way that money is produced.
All right, fine. Can you explain that, Michael, because it gets so confusing, and people said, well, the government's printing the money, so where does the Federal Reserve system come in?
Well, it's interesting because the government is basically, I guess you would say, leasing the space and leasing the machinery necessary to manufacture it. But again, it's basically the Federal Reserve who controls the issuing of the currency, whether it be paper or a coin. And these are the individuals who decide how much there will be floating around out here and basically what its value will be.
And the incredible thing is that the Fed will have the Treasury print money, and then they'll give the money to the Fed, and then the Fed will buy bonds from the Treasury, and of course that then spends the money into the economy. And then, of course, when they want to contract the monetary supply, why they buy bonds, I guess they sell bonds to the banks, and then the banks give them their money, and then that takes money out of the economy. It's the most incredible system by which a few powerful men can control the amount of money in circulation. They control the interest rates. They control rapidity with which currency circulates. They can expand the monetary base by expanding the reserve requirements or restricting the reserve requirements. In other words, the banks have to have less money on hand. They can lend up to 90-95% if they have a dollar, they can lend up to 90 or 95 cents on that dollar. And if effectively allow the banks to create money out of nothing, which is exactly what the Treasury system is doing.
And as long as people have confidence in the banks, I guess it shouldn't be a problem. But if you go back to Y2K and we saw that, hey, that confidence was waning and the Fed had to start pumping that money out, I mean, in unprecedented batches. And you saw lines starting to develop at banks, and they had limits on how much cash you could withdraw. And that, again, is because of that fractional reserve system that you pointed out.
And, Darren, we have a couple of excellent books. Have you read The Creature from Jekyll Island or The Federal Reserve Conspiracy?
No, I have not. I've heard of each of them.
Well, we carry both of those books, and later on we'll tell you how to get them. But it's so important you have the information so that you can convince other people. We have a wonderful video, too. It's called Phenomenon. It's the Monopoly Men. And you'll actually hear one of the world's leading economists who was there at the University of Chicago for so many, many years. And he talks about how the Federal Reserve System created the Great Depression of 1929 by contracting the money supply. And all the suffering that the people experienced was a direct byproduct of what these wicked men were doing. They can create inflation, they can create depression, and right now I think that they're setting us up for a collapse of the system so they can take us into a cashless society and control every aspect of what we do. Darren, is there anything else you'd like to ask our guest tonight?
Well, I just wanted to get this clear with the bonds. Congress issues the bonds and then sells them to the Federal Reserve in exchange for money.
Yeah, but go ahead. Can you explain that?
The other way around is what's going on there. And again, basically, what they're doing is they're issuing the bonds. We're buying the bonds, and we're basically paying to hang ourselves. We're paying for the rope to hang ourselves here.
Basically, the Mint prints the money and gives it to the Federal Reserve System, and they use that money to buy the bonds that which the Treasury is issuing. And that then gets the money out. That now the Treasury has the money to give to the government that they can actually use to pay all the government debts. It's a Ponzi scheme, but people don't understand it, and they've made it purposely complicated so we wouldn't understand. It's like sleight of hand.
Uh-huh.
But, of course, it's all an illusion.
Uh-huh. Indeed it is.
Okay.
Well, thank you so much.
Okay, fine. Well, Michael, why don't you get your telephone number out once more
And I want to cover one thing that Eileen had mentioned, and she'd asked about what kind of money. And we want to cover this because it's pretty important, Stan. You can't be in a position where you take your grocery money and buy gold and silver coins. You have to look at what it is that you've got in assets or in wealth that you currently just have parked somewhere because it's what you thought would be a safe place to park some money and maybe earn a little bit of interest. Well, look at that amount and say, am I earning 12.5% interest? If I'm not, I'm losing money. And if it's just sitting there and it's something that you're just parked there with, that's what you can look at putting into gold because, again, you can protect the buying power there. On the 5-year picture on that graph, gold is up 70%. And that is against that dollar's nasty, nasty decline. So it's a good way for you to protect your buying power. Stan, I'd mentioned the $10 Olympics. I want to mention that we have a very small batch of the P's and D's in the $10 Olympics, and they only made 33,000 of the Philadelphias, or the P's, and 34,000 of the D's from Denver. So it's a very tough coin to find, and normally they carry a pretty good premium, but right now they've got the same price going as the common one. Put that one out on special at 800-685-4042.
Give that telephone number once more time.
Sure, it's 800-685-4042.
And your website one more time.
ColonialResources.com.
colonialresources.com. We'll be back here in just a moment to wrap up this evening program here at Radio Liberty. Well, this is Dr. Stan and our guest, Michael Trudeau, and we're going to wrap up the program right now. Michael, we've got 3 minutes to give a parting thought for our listeners.
Sure. Well, it wouldn't be complete without touching on the Real ID Act, because as you are aware, it flew through the Senate unanimously here a couple, about last week or a little bit before that, and I guess it's a done deal now. So it's interesting to note that this is going to be done to protect us. All of us will have that fancy new ID. In Minnesota and Wisconsin, we already have them. And it comes with all the hidden, barcodes and so on, and the magnetic strips, and all these things that are security features that couldn't possibly be circumvented. And yet here in Minnesota, we just busted a great ring where they were producing these things that even the magnetic strip, when run through the register, would tell the fake age of the kids who were buying these fake IDs. They were so perfect that law enforcement couldn't tell the difference between the two. So again, there goes your Real ID Act right out the window as far as that protecting us from terrorism. I also want to point out the Bank of America Corporation and Wachovia Group are among the big banks notifying now more than 670,000 customers that account information was stolen. What may be the biggest security breach to hit the banking industry, account information on the customers was illegally sold by bank employees to some guy who's been identified as Orazio Lembo. But they're saying that the number of accounts breached will top over 1 million. And again, this is the accounts at the bank. So again, if you think you're safe in the banks, think again. And if you think Real ID is going to make us safer from terrorism, once again, think again. If you can have the employees of the bank selling your information, I don't see how we'll make the Real ID stick.
Well, I think, Michael, of course, this is really all a scam. It is all about perception. My goodness, we have no security. Why even the banks, even the federal government, a major corporations is releasing all these people? People are going to steal our identity. Well, the solution, obviously, why, if everybody would have a chip. And then, of course, they couldn't steal our identity. And, ladies and gentlemen, that's how they're going to bring in the cashless society. They know exactly what they're doing. And they're creating our ideas, molding our reality, forming our tastes. And it's all being done largely by men we have never heard of. Michael Trudeau, thank you so much for being with us. It's always a pleasure having you here on Radio Liberty. And we'll look forward then to having you back with us again next month. I think that we are in extremely exciting times, don't you?
I agree.
And I think that it's so important people understand the fundamentals of economics, and that's what we try to do with our guests as we begin analyzing what's going on and try to bring you up to date with of course, what the people who are in the know are saying. And remember what Paul Volcker said? I don't know whether it'll be with a bang or a whimper. I don't know whether it's going to be sooner or later. But I'm anticipating a financial crisis. Good night, Michael.
Good night.
Well, this is Dr. Stan, and I hope you enjoyed our conversation with Michael Trudeau. And for those of you who, didn't just hear my remarks, I was simply quoting again from Paul Volcker. You can go up on the Internet and pull the article down from the Washington Post, August 10th, 2005, Paul Volcker. Type that in Google, August 10th, 2005, Paul Volcker, and you'll get the article he wrote for the Washington Post, where he said that there is no incidence in all history where a nation has spent 6% more than it's making indefinitely, and very soon foreign banks are going to have their fill of dollars. He said, I don't know whether it's going to come with a bang or a whimper. I don't know whether it's going to be sooner or later. There probably is going to be settled with a financial crisis or crises. Then he went on to say that a wise man had once said that, what needs to be done is usually put off until later. And then it's too late. And he hopes that, of course, will not be the epitaph for America. Ladies and gentlemen, when one of the architects of our current monetary system tells us that, you better heed his warning. Well, actually, to understand what's going on, you need the book The Creature from Jekyll Island. That's The Creature from Jekyll Island, written by our good friend Ed Griffin. The Federal Reserve Conspiracy, written by Professor Anthony Sutton. And then, of course, we carry the book, Fiat Money, Inflation in France, which simply tells what happened in France in 1789. And although the book was written over 125, 150 years ago, it is just as accurate today as when it was written by Andrew Dickinson White, who is the founder of Cornell University. And then, of course, we carry the video phenomenon, The Monopoly Men. And, of course, you'll see actually there, see Milton Friedman talking about how the Federal Reserve System created the Great Depression. You must understand that everything, of course, is completely manipulated. Nothing is as it appears to be. Our leaders financed the communist movement starting back in 1918. If you doubt that, you need to get my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, and the book we carry by Professor Sutton entitled Wall Street and the Bolshevik Revolution. Our leaders financed the Nazis. After all, it was the best enemy money could buy. You need the book Wall Street and the Rise of Hitler. And then, of course, we financed the North Vietnamese during the Vietnam War. The book is the best enemies money could buy. They're all written by Professor Sutton. And you need to get my interview with Professor Sutton before he passed on here a few years ago, entitled The Best Enemies Money Could Buy. My interview with Professor Sutton. They're all available from Radio Liberty. Give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. And then please go to our website at radioliberty.com. That's radioliberty.com. You can listen to our programs there directly or indirectly on the Internet. 5 hours a day, we're on the Genesis Network for 2 hours. We're on the American Freedom Network for 1 hour. We're on the Radio Liberty Network for 3 hours, and you can get the websites there. We are on shortwave 4 hours a day, satellite 5 hours a day, somewhere across America on radio 5 hours a day, and then we do our weekend programs on some 35, 36 stations. We do have an outreach, but of course we're really dependent on those of you in the listening audience who believe that there's a problem and would like to join us in this epic struggle to determine whether this nation or any nation conceived under God can long endure. And so, if you read my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, which really will give you a great overview of what's going on, that's the Brotherhood of Darkness, why you'll understand we're involved in a spiritual battle behind everything that's going on today. And there really are secret societies. The Rosicrucians, the Theosophists, the Masons, the various organizations that work within the shadows. You see them up on the Internet. If you pull down my newsletters, you will hear about organizations you've never heard of. Yes, there are witches, covens, and Satanists, and Luciferians, and they all have one goal, a new world order, a new world religion. Understand we're involved in a spiritual battle for the souls of men. Our number again, 1-800-544-8927. Pray for America. Pray for revival, but please pray for Radio Liberty. We'll be back in just a moment for the second hour. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They're my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers, and we welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. That's 831 if you're calling from another country, 831-464-8295. But please hold your calls for the time being, because we have with us on the line from actually back in New York City right now. I think he ordinarily lives in California, but Bill DeMaw is with us, and he's written a script and actually produced a wonderful DVD. It's entitled Missing, Presumed Dead. And it's really the story of his uncle, who was in the military, in the Army, during the Korean War. And, of course, he was captured by the North Vietnamese and then betrayed by his government. They knew he was alive, and they lied to the family for years. And it is the official policy of our government to lie to the people. They lied after the Korean War. They lied after the Vietnam War. They lied about what happened on September 11th. And they're still lying to Bill's family about the fate of Bill's uncle. And so he spent 3 years putting together the most amazing DVD, which we carry, called Missing, Presumed Dead. Bill, thank you so very much for being with us.
Well, Dr. Stan, a really great pleasure to be back again.
Now, why don't you give our listeners here just sort of the background of how you happened to produce this video, and then, of course, what you learned as you began, you know, interviewing people and tracking down the various people who had actually seen your uncle in the prison camps in North Korea.
Yes, well, I started the documentary more about a personal story about my Uncle Bob trying to find his youngest brother, Roger, who was missing in the Korean War. And Bob has dedicated his whole life to trying to find Roger. And for his journey, it started out when Roger was captured in the early part of the war, when the Chinese crossed the Yalu River and overran the American forces, the UN command forces, and Roger was declared missing. And that's all the military ever told our family, was that Roger's missing. And when the war ended, a year after the war ended, every soldier that was still classified as an MIA was automatically declared dead. And that's where the title comes from, the designation Missing, Presumed Dead. And at that point, the government stopped paying the family the soldiers' pay. So, and it's basically one thing I came across, which Bob had found, was a document by the Assistant Secretary of Defense, Secretary of the Army, which said that keeping these soldiers on the active POW list is costing the government over $1 million a year. At some point, we'll have to classify the missing, presumed dead. And of course, once they do that, then they pretty much forget about these guys. And that's one of the big stumbling blocks. One of the things I was trying to show in the documentary, and initially it was really about a story about Bob, like I said, about Bob trying to find his brother Roger, but really it turned into a much, much bigger story than I intended once I started interviewing people in government, people who knew what the real story was about our policy of basically abandoning POWs at the end of wars.
And you see, the one thing they can't let the American people know is we routinely abandon our prisoners of war. We did it in the First World War. We did it in the Second World War. We did it in Vietnam. We did it in Korea. And would you want your boy to go overseas and fight? You knew he was going to be betrayed? Well, this is this Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty. Our guest this evening is Bill DeMaw. And we're talking about a DVD, a video he's put together. And we actually carry the video because we think it's an important one. It's called Missing, presumed dead. It's actually done with a lot of film footage. It was actually shot during the Korean War. The pictures were actually taken many times, even by the communists, or I don't know how. How did you get so much of that film footage there, Bill?
Most of the footage came from the National Archives in Maryland. Spent several days up there going through the film footage. It's quite a task, because some of this material only appears on actual 35mm film and 16mm film. So researchers have to go in there and load up what's called a flatbed machine and view these films, and then get it transferred over to video. So it's quite a lot of time to get those. Interestingly, one of the videos, I had a very hard time. I could not find any footage of American POWs in the POW camps in North Korea. And there was an investigator from the Pentagon, In Sung Lee, found some footage while he was doing research, and I was able to get that footage from him. There's only one reel that he was able to find that actually showed American POWs. Most of the footage of the war in regards to POWs is the Chinese and North Korean POWs that the UN command was holding. So I was very, very fortunate to find that footage. And you may recall that In Sung Lee is the Pentagon POW MIA office analyst who wrote a report that said that in 1996 he wrote a report that said there is very clear intelligence reports evidence that Americans are still alive in North Korea, and when he wrote that report he was pretty much blacklisted in the POW MIA office and ultimately had to leave that office, and now he works for Homeland Security. He's chief of operations at Homeland Security.
But the thing is that they do not want the American people to know that we abandon our prisoners of war. Think of the implications. Who would want to go overseas and fight? You don't mind fighting for your country, but would you want to be betrayed by your country? And that's really what it gets right down to.
And that's why people always ask me, the Korean War was 53 years ago, and the Vietnam War was over 30 years ago. Why would a government be interested in keeping this all a secret at this time? And really, the answer is that the policy has not changed.
Hold that thought there for just a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty. Our guest this evening is Bill Dumas, and his video is called Missing, Presumed Dead. And, of course, some of the incredible stories that Bill tells about what happened as Uncle Bob Dumas, who we've had as a guest on our program, actually tried to get the government to release the records. Now, the government knew, of course, what had happened to Roger, but they lied to him, and it was official government policy to lie. So then, of course, they wanted him declared not missing, presumed dead, but a prisoner of war. So why don't you tell the story of how Bob did everything he could to get Roger reclassified prisoner of war, because the government knew he was alive, at least for several years after the end of the war. So you pick up that story, and then the threats, the strange deaths of people who are going to testify. Tell that incredible, incredible story, will you?
Yes. What the government was saying is that they had no idea what happened to Roger. As it turned out, they knew all along that he was a POW and that he was left behind, but they never told our family that. And Bob just kept searching and searching. He just felt that his brother, that there was something more to it, and his mother had a feeling that he was still alive, and she made Bob make a promise that he would never stop looking for Roger. And so Bob dedicated his life to finding Roger, and in the first 25 years of his search, he slowly gathered information with the Freedom of Information Act, was able to obtain documents of debriefings from former POWs that said that they knew Roger Dumas in the POW camps, and that two of them stated that they were with Roger when all the recruits were being repatriated, and Roger and several others were brought back into the compounds. and they thought that there was just some technicality, and he'd be coming home soon after that.
They never realized, of course, that the government allowed them, North Koreans, to take him back into custody and never turn him over. They thought he got out, and he didn't get out. And the government knew that the North Koreans kept him, and they concealed that information. Would that be a fair statement?
Yes, absolutely. In fact, when Bob finally was able to find these ex-POWs, and in one case they asked, "Well, how's Roger doing?" And Bob told them, "Well, he never came out." They were all very, very upset, and they've all vowed to help Bob to find out what happened to Roger. And what happened is Bob filed a federal lawsuit against the U.S. Army, where he was suing the government to reclassify Roger POW. And he basically, in a federal court case, was able to prove that Roger was a POW. Now, there were five POW, ex-POW witnesses. All of them were warned not to testify.
In other words, the government went to these men and warned them and threatened them, told them not to testify. In other words, the government was afraid the truth was going to come out about the betrayal. Is that right?
Absolutely.
And they actually sent people out to talk to all these people?
They did. They were all visited by DIA investigators or FBI agents in a couple of cases.
And weren't they actually threatened?
They were told they were threatened. One gentleman by the name of Walter Enbaum was visited by an Army captain. He worked for the U.S. Commerce Department. He was told basically that if he testified, he could count on losing his government job, losing his pension.
Ladies and gentlemen, that is the sort of thing that they will do to terrify people so that, you know, if you're working for the government, you've been there for 18 years or 20 years, do you want to get fired and lose your life pension and your security and your health benefits? And so they will threaten you to silence you so people will not come forward. They're afraid to come out because the government is going to get them. And you know, it's old saying is when the government fears the people, there's freedom. But when the people fear the government, there is tyranny. And there's a lot to be fearful of because they will come and get you. Now, you actually had five people, and suddenly they were going to come to testify. Two of them suddenly became too ill, and then two of them suddenly died?
Yes. In fact, his lead witness, who was the most outspoken of all the witnesses, he became a very vocal advocate of the POW issue at that time. He was warned. He was visited a second time by the FBI. And he refused to talk to them. And about 3 weeks before the trial, he died of a heart attack, and his wife was certain that he was killed.
And ladies and gentlemen, they actually kill people. I've actually interviewed three separate assassins on my programs, people trained as assassins, Colonel Marvin, a man named L.D. Howard, a man named Chip Tatum. They were all, of course, hired by the CIA as professional murderers. And, you know, of course, they won't actually admit to any murders that they've done. After all, there is no statute of limitation on murders, but they will tell you that they were contacted and asked to be assassins for the government. So you have to understand that this thing really does go on. And I hate to tell you that there is no tooth fairy and that Santa Claus is not real, but there are wicked people in our government who march to a different drumbeat and dream a different dream. So, actually, there was one who the family believed he was killed to keep him from testifying, and wasn't there another one who had a heart attack as well?
There was. George Rogers was another former POW that was going to testify. He died of a heart attack shortly before the trial happened.
It must be infectious, maybe an epidemic going around.
Yeah, there's definitely an epidemic of heart attacks, and if you, throughout this investigation I did, there are just several cases of people dying of heart attacks, including Larry Jolodin, who's a journalist who was also doing a documentary about this issue, was editing the documentary, and he was also at the same time covering the war in Bosnia, and he died of a heart attack while jogging with the U.S. general in charge of the American forces over there. And then another journalist, friend of his, tried to find the edits of the documentary that Larry Jolodin was working on, and they could not find they could not find the rough edit that he was working on. They eventually found apparently some of the tapes that he shot, but suddenly that documentary film went by the wayside after he passed away.
And as incredible as these stories may seem, I've run into this so many times. In fact, so many people that I've interviewed on my programs have died very mysteriously. The most recent one was Gary Webb, who, of course, had exposed the CIA's involvement in the drug smuggling and their support for the people within the Contras who were smuggling drugs and their protection of the people within the Contras who were smuggling drugs. And Gary was the most amazing suicide. He shot himself in the head not once, but twice. Amazing, amazing accomplishment.
Quite a feat, yeah.
Right. And I wonder how many people honestly believe that these things just do not happen here in the United States. So anyway, of course, now, eventually, though, they did go to trial. There was at least one of the men who did come and testify. Out of the five, two were suddenly too ill, two mysteriously died, one actually came to the trial. And your uncle was able then, Uncle Bob, was able to get Uncle Roger reclassified as POW rather than presumed dead. Is that right?
That's correct. And this is to back up one step. The one POW witness that was able to testify, they flew him in just about 2 hours before the trial, and they kept him sequestered in a waiting room. And while he was in the waiting room, he was approached by an Army officer, an Army captain, who told him that if he goes through with his testimony in court, that they'll reveal, that they'll make public information about his mother when his mother was a youth and had a bit of a dark past, and they were going to reveal that publicly if he testified, and he just refused to bow to that threat, and he said, it doesn't matter what you say about my mother because she's passed away, and it's not, you can't hurt her and you're not going to hurt me, and the truth is what's important here.
Now, because he's an old man at this time, he's fought for his country, he's been a prisoner of war. And the way he's treated is they're threatening to, humiliate his mother. I mean, what sort of people are these working within the upper echelons of our government? And I would like to suggest you've got to be pretty evil to do something like that.
Absolutely.
And of course, but the trial was won. And then, of course, the army was forced by the courts to admit that they'd lied all this time. And they were supposed then to reclassify him as POW. And how did they get around it? How did they violate the law themselves?
Once again, they used the same Missing Persons Act that they used in 1954 to declare all the MIAs presumed dead. They just used the same law to say that, okay, we're going to change the classification of Roger to POW, which is the first time that's ever happened in this country. They changed the status and then immediately added the clause, he's missing, presumed dead. Again, and that pretty much has closed the case once again. They didn't have to go any further in investigating into what actually happened to Roger and all the other POWs.
And, of course, the thing is that everything is being done to conceal the fact that we abandoned men in the First World War and in the Second World War and in Vietnam and Korea. And of course, the document that came out, it was put out actually by the staff from Jesse Helms when he was on the Foreign Affairs Committee, and it had to do with, of course, the status of POWs. And you actually interview some of the people who were on, at least one of the people who was on that committee that put out this report, and what happened to him after they put out a report, an official government report, incidentally, which we do carry, that goes into the background of the betrayal of these people in all four of those wars. What happened to the man who had the courage to put out the report and tell the truth?
Well, that was I interviewed both Dr. James Lesueur, who was Jesse Helms' chief of staff, as well as Tracy Usry, who was the chief investigator of the committee. And as soon as they wrote that report, they were the entire staff was fired.
And of course, ladies and gentlemen, that's what happens when you tell the truth and you work for government. But we do carry that report. It's one of the most important documents we carry. We call it the Helms Committee Report. It's available by itself as part of the Vietnam Special, but we'll tell you more about that a little later here at Radio Liberty. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is Bill Dumas, and we're talking about the video he produced. We actually have it in DVD form. It's called Missing, Presumed Dead. Would you like to talk a little bit about the Senate Foreign Relations Committee report that was put out that really went into the background, because they had actually had the opportunity to get into the files and document that we abandoned men in World War One, and between 20 and 25,000 in World War II, and they knew they were going to die in the prison camps, and they left them there. And Eisenhower and the others knew exactly what was going on. And the same is true in Korea and Vietnam. And nobody would stand up for the men, we betrayed.
Yeah, that report was quite groundbreaking. They did an incredible investigation and found out how these POWs had been abandoned, like you say, going back to World War One, and it gave just incredible accounts, very specific accounts of abandoned POWs in the Korean War and in the Vietnam War. And when this report came out, it really shook up Washington, shook up the Senate, and they couldn't just ignore the report. They had to set up create a committee to do a full supposedly a full investigation into these allegations.
Was that the one that they set up with the two traitors on it, John Kerry and John McCain?
Right. And when I interviewed James LeSueur, who was Jesse Helms' chief of staff, he said that that John McCain was adamant about being the chairman of that committee, and luckily Bob Dole would not allow him to be chairman. And McCain's purpose, his main purpose of being chairman was basically to derail that the whole committee.
And I think people have to understand that John McCain was a prisoner of war. He went over to the other side. He was hated by the other prisoners of war. He got special treatment. And, of course, he's always done everything he could to keep other prisoners of war from coming home. He has blocked them very effectively because the Vietnamese have something obviously on him, and he's afraid the American people will find out. But why is it that the media is always building up John McCain? Why do they always go to John McCain for his opinion? Why is it, of course, that John McCain was even thinking of being pushed for running for the presidency? There's an invisible force behind John McCain who betrayed not only his country but his fellow prisoners of war, but of course, the media is never going to tell you that. In fact, when John McCain, and we actually have the article out of Newsweek magazine, when John McCain was asked why he was considering running for the president, his remark was, well, because Angela Lansbury turned over the Queen of Diamonds. And anybody who knows the story of the Manchurian candidate knows that that was the trigger when Angela Lansbury turned over the Queen of Diamonds. Of course, I'm sure he said that with tongue-in-cheek, but maybe there's a great deal more truth there than you'll ever hear any other place. We actually have the article out of the Newsweek magazine, if anyone wants to check on it. Angela Lansbury turned over the Queen of Diamonds. So,
what an irony.
What an irony, right. And this is the man, you say, he really did everything he could to disrupt the meetings, didn't he? Even calling people who were testifying and telling the truth liars?
Exactly. Tracy Utrey, who was the chief investigator, he appeared before the committee several times, and he said McCain on several occasions called him a liar, and the committee would ask, well, where are you getting this information, and Tracy Utrey would say, well, we got it from the Pentagon.
Well, let's talk right for just a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest this evening is Bill Dumas, and we're talking about his video, Missing, Presumed Dead. He put 3 years in putting into it. We have it in DVD form. It's an excellent video. Really gripping. My wife and I were fascinated. Watched it. It's what, about an hour and 20 minutes?
The film is an hour and 5 minutes, but there's about two hours and 15 minutes of extra footage of interviews that didn't get into the actual film.
So you got the trailers there. A lot of footage with Bob Smith, Senator Bob Smith, who's certainly one of my favorite people. Anyway, let's get into the background of the hearings there, because you actually have a lot of footage of the hearings where John McCain and John Kerry are there, two traitors to America, and they're doing everything they can to disrupt these hearings that are supposed to get to the truth of the matter of what really happened to the men who were abandoned. Did that hearing deal with both Korea and Vietnam?
Yeah, it was primarily focused on Vietnam, and it was only during the hearings that they decided to also include Korea, the Korean War, but they only gave the Korean War one day of hearings, and that's where was some really explosive material was coming out, and they very quickly shut the hearings down after that. They didn't ask the Senate for funding to continue the hearings into a second year, which is really what needed to be done.
Because neither John Kerry nor John McClain wanted, of course, to find any POWs, because their major purpose was their loyalty to Vietnam, to actually getting an open trade and most favored nation treaty status for the people who were still holding our troops. And have you ever heard that the Vietnamese were quite willing to turn the people back again? But of course, we really didn't want the men set brought back.
Yeah, that's from a lot of sources I interviewed said that the Vietnamese, North Vietnamese, right after the war, were holding estimates of a few hundred at least POWs, basically as an insurance policy, because President Nixon promised the North Vietnamese for around $4 billion in aid after the war, once the peace treaty was signed. And, of course, Nixon reneged on supplying that money to the North Vietnamese. And so the North Vietnamese ended up keeping those POWs. And at that point, the United States government was not going to acknowledge that they were holding POWs, because they weren't going to give them the money. And this is how the policy really works, from what I can gather from all the research I've done, is that when a war ends and there's supposedly a complete POW exchange, inevitably, not all the POWs are exchanged. But once it's stated that, okay, we've exchanged these POWs and the peace treaty is signed, that any remaining soldiers are not considered POWs anymore. They're then considered hostages. And the government has a policy that we will not negotiate for hostages.
Well, at least the French, you know, say what you will about the French, they are still getting their troops back from Dien Bien Phu. They're ransoming them out. At least they had the loyalty to the men who were willing to fight for them. Henry Kissinger and Richard Nixon didn't have any loyalty to them at all. All they wanted to do was lie and cover them up so that their treachery would never be revealed. And to this day, most people do not realize that Henry Kissinger is primarily responsible for the retention and ultimate the deaths of so many American servicemen, and yet he is honored and just lauded and applauded by the media, and nobody ever brings out he's one of the most despicable men in the world.
Yeah, we can basically thank Kissinger for not getting our POWs back.
Because he's consistently lied about it. I mean, that's what's so untenable, and the media never call him for lying, because they know he's lying. I mean, he lied about Chile, he lied about Rhodesia, he's lied about everything he's ever done. And he's been allowed to get away with it, because, of course, he is one of the elite who rules the world.
And it's funny how the administration after administration just falls in lockstep with this policy and never fully investigates to try to reveal what has happened. It's amazing how the underlying bureaucracy keeps this policy going on and on.
And Chris, he is simply an agent for the Rockefeller interests, paid for them, bought and paid for, a man without integrity or honesty at all. But of course, he's very well played by his treachery, by the people who rule America, indeed, the people who rule the world. Our telephone number, 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here in the Central Coast of California, 464-8295. Give us a call. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here. Our guest this evening is Bill DeMaum. And, of course, what we're doing is talking about his video, and everybody should really get this video. It's called Missing, Presumed Dead. It's pretty beautifully done. And you're going to see all the footage shot from the 1991, POW hearings with John McCain and with, of course, John Kerry. And Senator Kerry is doing everything he can, of course, to cover up the treachery, as is John McCain. But I think it's something, some of those clips that you have where John McCain is insulting people and calling them liars, I would think those words would just stick in his throat. He was actually there to disrupt the hearings, to keep them from getting anything. Wasn't that your impression, from getting at the truth?
Absolutely. Anybody who testified before the hearings presenting any kind of evidence that there's intelligence reports of live POWs being left behind, he would absolutely chastise in front of the committee. Even Colonel Philip Corso, who was President Eisenhower's POW MA liaison, he was there in North Korea during the peace negotiations. He was the frontline man on the POW situation, and he testified that he told President Eisenhower in the Oval Office that POWs were transferred to the Soviet Union, and that it would be very difficult to get them back. And the president asked him, "Well, what do you recommend?" And Colonel Corso said, I think there's nothing we can do. We have to leave these people behind, and we can't tell American people that." And so he was basically confessing this. He says, "I've been holding this information in for 40 years. I have to get it out." And he was confessing this thing that by that point he was feeling very, I'm sure, very guilty about. But he said at the time he didn't see any other way out. Eisenhower, he said, took that advice, and that's what happened. And here he is. You can tell the man is being honest, and it's a very difficult thing for him to have to say. And McCain is sitting there basically telling him he's a liar, and it's just startling.
Well, I think it really tells you a great deal about John McCain and why, of course, he is in the United States Senate, and the fact that there is an invisible force behind John McCain. He always gets a good media. Have you noticed how John McCain always gets a good media? He's always the one who's interviewed by the press, his opinion on every issue. When was the last time you saw Senator Coburn, Tom Coburn, interviewed by the major controlled media in America? Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty. Our guest this evening is Bill DeMaum, and his video, really, he's done a tremendous job on this. It's called Missing, Presumed Dead. It's available by calling 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. And, of course, it's got all sorts of footage that was shot during the war and of the American prisoners of war. And then the hearings of some of the, actually, the Senate hearing where you see John McCain insulting military officers who are trying to tell the truth. And I understand that there was this one woman who came from the National Association of Families of the POWs. And McCain was so cruel to her. Why, of course, she was in tears. Wasn't that true?
Yeah, that was true. That was Dolores Alfond, who is the national chairperson of the American Alliance of Families, the POW-MIAs. And when she testified, she said he just criticized her so brutally that she was actually crying. And I also spoke to a witness who was actually in the gallery of the Senate hearings and witnessed that. And he said he just could not believe just how cruel he could be to somebody who was just there presenting the evidence that they had.
Yeah, well, of course, he's a very wicked man. And he, as I said, he's sold out as fellow POWs. He is hated by the POWs. And you talk to the POWs, you know, the people in their organizations will tell you that they know McCain went over to the other side and was a traitor. Many people, of course, were beaten to death rather than, of course, go along with the North Vietnamese. And I actually have a picture of him actually hugging one of the people who was torturing the other prisoners of war. It really, fellow came over this, you know, here to testify. And really, it's so disheartening to realize the average American has no idea that we have traitors working right in the United States Senate. And of course, they're being pushed into those positions by very powerful forces in America who are intent upon, of course, bringing communist Vietnam into the family of nations. Well, you know, what is the thing that you learned most, you know, during your research into the background of your Uncle Roger, who was actually classified missing, presumed dead? What have you really learned about this whole thing after spending 3 years of research and travel and a great deal of money and effort?
Well, what's interesting for me is that, you know, I've been close to this story for many, many years. You know, my uncle's been working on this forever, and certainly long before, or a while before I was born anyway. But in the mid-70s, I was trying to get a magazine story. I was in journalism school. I was trying to get a magazine story on what my uncle was doing, and wasn't getting anybody interested. Nobody could believe anything like this could happen. And around 1992, I wrote a screenplay for Oliver Stone's company, hoping to get a feature film made, and ultimately they declined to make the film. But for me, actually taking on the documentary and really going in there and interviewing people that were very, very close to this issue, it just validated everything my uncle had been saying for so many years. I mean, there, you know, people that don't know the issue very well know what my uncle has said about it and think, okay, this is just one guy, one person's opinion. But it was for me, it was pretty amazing to interview people like Senator Smith and Congressman Bob Dornan and Dr. James Lesore and Tracy Essery, Dr. Joseph Douglas, the author who wrote Betrayed about the POW/MIAs, that, you know, finding all this evidence that backed up everything my uncle had been saying all these years, that these POWs were abandoned, and that the government, what I find still so shocking after all this, is that even today, the government is going to extraordinary lengths to keep this whole thing quiet. And in fact, last week I had a dinner with a pretty high-level Washington insider, and he told me that he's someone who wants to help expose this story to Congressmen. He told me that he's been talking to others, some pretty high-level people in Washington about this, and he said that he's gotten warnings that he's taking his life into his own hands by pursuing this issue.
He's taking his life in his hands. In other words, he could be suicided. Is that the inference?
Yeah, that's right. I mean, these are people who are high up in very, you know, pretty high up in government, saying that this is still a very sensitive issue and that you're really risking your life by getting involved in it.
And ladies and gentlemen, this is the truth of what's going on. You spent a lot of time with Senator Bob Smith from New Hampshire. Certainly one of my heroes, a man who is a God-fearing a Christian who was actually in the United States Senate for 12 years. And because he was pro-life, because he was pro-American, because he was pro-military, because he was pro-POW and tried to get the truth out, why the Bush administration targeted him and ran somebody in the primary against him, a fellow named Sununu, because they didn't want a real conservative Christian there representing the state of New Hampshire in the United States Senate. But you know, certainly Bob Smith wanted to get the truth out about the POWs, and the Bush administration wanted to cover it up. Tell us what you learned from Senator Bob Smith, who, you know, was eventually, of course, defeated in the Republican primary. And then, of course, the Bush administration turned around and supported Arlen Specter, 33rd degree Mason, the man, of course, invented the magic bullet theory, who was rewarded for his treachery during the Warren Commission by becoming a United States Senator, who's on the wrong side on every moral issue and gun issue, and certainly on judiciary issues. And yet, of course, the Bush administration backed him in the primary over a God-fearing, a true pro-life conservative, saying, oh, well, we always backed the incumbent. We never backed the challenger. Well, gee, why didn't they back the incumbent in New Hampshire? Why, because Bob Smith was an honest man. And, of course, Arlen Specter is a traitor to America. That's why the Bush administration got rid of Smith. That's why they backed Arlen Specter. And now they're saying, oh, gee, Arlen Specter may be the swing vote as far as getting our judges in. Why we've just, wouldn't it be terrible if he went with the Democrats? Well, let's pick up. What did you learn from Senator Bob Smith, a really true heroic American?
Yeah, the POW-MIA cause really took a setback when Bob Smith wasn't renominated.
And when the Bush administration destroyed him, they threw everything into New Hampshire to defeat him in the Republican primary. They didn't want a God-fearing man in the United States Senate.
No, that was, to me it's just startling that something like that can happen. I mean, he was a popular incumbent, and he was a sure bet to win the seat again. So to run somebody against him just was quite a disheartening thing.
In fact, somebody like Sununu, who'd been with George Herbert Walker Bush the first time, he was one of the chief aides to George Herbert Walker Bush when he was president, and he was actually fired under a cloak of a disgrace because it was found he was using military helicopters, a White House helicopter, to take him so he could play golf. He was using government helicopters to go golfing. And he was, of course, fired in disgrace, and now they brought him back. They've just sort of like the phoenix rising from the ashes, and now is a United States Senator from New Hampshire, thanks, of course, to George W. Bush. Go ahead. What did you learn from Senator Bob Smith?
Yeah, I believe that when I interviewed Senator Smith, it took me a while to get Senator Smith to do an interview. He hadn't really spoken publicly about the POW issue, so it was very fortunate to finally get down to Florida, where he lives now, and do the interview. And it was the longest interview that I've done for this documentary. We spent about 3 or 4 hours together. He was very, very candid, and I could tell he was a bit reserved. He didn't want to sound like sour grapes about having to deal with. He was very, very careful about how what he said about Kerry and McCain. He said, well, in a documentary you'll see him saying, well, Kerry and McCain weren't quite going at it with the same intent that he was, or same approach that he was, and really he was being very kind. But Senator Smith was one of two or three senators on that committee that really wanted to find out what happened with these POWs. And Senator Smith was the first senator to go into North Korea and to negotiate for the release of the remains of Americans that were recovered from North Korea. And he said that while he was there, he was absolutely certain there were still live Americans there as well. And he felt the same way about Vietnam. When he went to Vietnam, it's as if his trip was choreographed just so that there would be the appearance that everything was okay, but clearly there was a good sense that he was being kept away from any sort of evidence of live POWs that may still be in Southeast Asia. He talked a lot about Bobby Garwood, about why is it that Bobby Garwood finally is released from Vietnam, and all they want to do is court-martial him, put him in jail. Why isn't the first thing they ask him when he's released, have you seen any other Americans while you were imprisoned in Southeast Asia? That point didn't even occur to them. All they wanted to do was keep Bobby Garwood
filing when he came back to the United States?
Well, of course, the reason was because Barbara Garwood knew about all the men who had betrayed and who had left behind, and the government didn't want that information out. That's why they had to indict Barbara Garwood. That's why they had to humiliate him. That's why they had to demonize him. In fact, he was told by his Vietnam captors when he was coming back, they said, "You'll wish you had never left here. I mean, when you get home, they're going to do everything they can to destroy you. You will regret the day you ever left Vietnam." And I think in many ways he did. We have a wonderful four-tape set of my interviews with Bobby Garwood called One Man Returned. One Man Returned. And he openly says about all the men he knew that were there, that were left behind. He knew their names. He knew their serial numbers. He had an amazingly retentive mind. And he was smart enough to get out. But, of course, he wasn't smart enough to prevent the government from silencing him and from keeping the American people from realizing the treachery which exists at the leadership of both political parties, the total evil and depravity that is there, that wanted those men betrayed. You've got to be pretty evil to take men who are willing to die for their country and betray them, and that's just what they did. But they can't let the American people know, which is why I'm sure they threaten the lives of people who try to get the truth out. Ladies and gentlemen, we're not talking about something imaginary. We're not talking about something in the X-Files. We're talking about something that Bill Humay actually experienced, and he's talked to the people who've gone through this, and they've had their lives threatened for daring to try to tell the truth. So, well, anyway, what did Senator Smith tell you?
One thing that he brought out even during the hearings, what the Senate panel would do was try and the Pentagon working in concert with the Pentagon since it was John Kerry's chief of staff who was tipping off the Pentagon, telling the Pentagon officials what questions they would be asking in the coming sessions, so the Pentagon could prepare their answers. What Senator Smith stated was when witnesses were giving testimony of evidence of where POWs might be held, they would have the satellite photos. They would have inverse images of the satellite photos, so that when the witness would say, what he remembered was going down the main street of this village, and he took a left, and he would give the directions. Well, because there was a reverse image, those directions were opposite. So the witness would say, "I took a left here," but if you look at the image, well, the reverse satellite image, there is no left there. There's only a right.
In other words, they falsify the evidence to add confusion.
Exactly. So now the witness looked like they were confused, and it basically caused the witnesses to be discredited because, well, obviously they don't have a clear memory of this because their directions are all wrong.
Really, what treachery that the people at the upper echelons of government will use to conceal the truth from the American people?
It is astounding. And even during the hearings, there was a Senate investigator by the name of John McCreary. I think he's with the State Department now. He brought impeachment charges up against Senator Kerry, in fact, and wrote a letter. It was about a five-page letter with these charges, which included the shredding of classified documents.
During the hearing, in other words, they were actually shredding classified documents. Isn't that against the law?
Absolutely, and these were documents that dealt with live sightings of American POWs in Southeast Asia.
How long before the hearings in 91? So how long before that were there still evidence of live sightings?
I'm not sure. Unfortunately, I didn't investigate much on the Vietnam side because my documentary focused on Korea and the Korean War. And those live sightings go back to mid-90s. And so when you think about the Korean War being 53 years ago, and in the mid-90s there are live sightings in North Korea, I know from talking to people who actually go into Southeast Asia even to this day and look for American POWs that are still there. They've come across
what they feel is very strong evidence of live POWs. Actual documents that were shredded. I'm not sure how recent those are, but I'm sure they're within probably the past decade. I would guess.
Right, and so it's, nothing would ever be done to John Kerry because he also has a force, invisible force behind him, just like John McCain.
Yes, that seems to be, and in fact, what the documentary really didn't expound upon, but does mention through some of the people being interviewed, is that after the hearings were over and relations with Vietnam normalized, is that his chief of staff became a trade liaison to Vietnam, and his family, his wife's family, the Hines family, want a very lucrative real estate deal with the Vietnamese government.
Now, you might even think there might be a little conflicts of interest, maybe a few tens of hundreds of millions of dollars of trade. How could he possibly be impartial when his wife is going to get special favors? We'll be back here in just a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and we were just talking about how John Kerry's wife's, the Hines family, was getting all sorts of special trade. What sort of deals were they getting with the North Vietnamese? Once, of course, we opened up negotiations after those hearings, after the whitewash that John Kerry and John McCain gave to the North Vietnamese.
Well, Tracy Essery stated in the interview that I had with him was that the Hines family, which apparently owns the largest worldwide real estate company, they received an exclusive land rights deal with the government of Vietnam.
Apparently
worth billions of dollars.
Couldn't somebody suggest there might be a little conflict of interest there for John?
Well, I would certainly think that, you know, that would come up. I have no idea. One thing I haven't followed through on is what happened with these impeachment charges that John McCreary, the Senate investigator, brought before the Senate panel. I don't know. Well, I mean, one thing I'm hoping to do is do a follow-up documentary that'll focus on the Vietnam War, and that's one of the issues I want to go into.
Well, I hope that you will. Of course, I remember very well the Tiananmen Square when, of course, the Chinese communists killed 10,000 or more people in the square and the surrounding areas, and there, of course, was a tremendous outcry for certainly punishing China by not offering the most favored nation treaty status. And within a few days after that terrible, terrible slaughter, why George Herbert Walker Bush, the President of the United States, rewarded the Chinese communists by giving them most favored nation treaty status. And it just so happened that George Herbert Walker Bush's brother was deeply invested with the Chinese communists. And I wonder if that had any influence at all on the President's decision to reward the Chinese communists for their slaughter at Tiananmen Square with most favored nation treaty status. Do these things really go on in the world? Yes, ladies and gentlemen, there really is no Santa Claus. Well, Bill, we've got about 30 seconds to wrap up the program. What's a parting thought you'd like to leave with our listeners?
Well, one thing I want to say is that there is something we can do. And what we're trying to do through a couple of organizations, we're trying to get the copy of the DVD out to every congressman, every senator. And there is a bill working its way through Congress. It's House Resolution 123, which will create a committee to investigate the POW MIAs again. And hopefully it'll be a committee that actually follows through on any investigation. So what we're going to be doing over the next couple of months, especially this week.
Hold that thought right now. Well, Bill is saying that one of the things that they hope to do is to get a copy of their DVD into the hands of every congressman and every senator, and there's legislation actually that's working its way through Congress to reopen the investigations, and hopefully why neither John McCain or John Kerry will have anything to do with that. So what can people do? Is there a website you'd like to refer them to? What can people do to help you?
Well, you know, the best thing to do is probably the easiest thing to do is if everybody can email or fax or call their congressmen and tell them to sponsor House Resolution 123 to create a committee to investigate the POWs. That would be the best thing, because we'll get the documentary out there to all the congressmen, and if that can be followed up by everybody calling their congressmen to support this, the House Resolution 123.
House Resolution H.R. 123. Support it. Ask your congressman to support H.R. 123. And I think it's important. Bill's doing everything he can. He's got connections back in Washington, D.C., but he needs your help. And remember, if you get enough emails off to your congressman and your senator, they'll get the message, because, as Everett Dirksen said so well, when I feel the heat, I see the light. God bless you, Bill. Thank you so much for being with us.
Bless you, too, and thank you so much for having me.
Bye-bye. Okay, well, I guess this evening has been Bill Dumas. Of course, he's put out this wonderful DVD. We carry it. It's called Missing, Presumed Dead. Give us a call if you'd like to know more about it. 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. And then, of course, we hope that many of you want to get our four-tape set on The Men We Left Behind, which is the story of what happened in Vietnam to the POWs we abandoned, or One Man Return, my interviews with Bobby Garwood, the true story of this truly great American hero who was demonized and everything was done to destroy him. And then, of course, my interviews with Monica Jensen Stevenson in both of those videos, Monica, who'd written a book, Kiss the Boys Goodbye, and of course she was rewarded by being sued with the full support, I'm sure, of the CIA in an effort to get her second book, Spite House, off the market. The first book, well, of course, they just accidentally shredded 5,000 copies of the reprint of that book. The original publisher called back the copies and wouldn't distribute them. She got the copyright back, went to Canada, where she's living today. And when they, of course, reprinted the book, somebody bought up the publisher immediately, and just accidentally, I want you to know it was just accidentally, they shredded 5,000 copies. You can get our four-tape sets. In fact, you can get the Vietnam special, the four-tape set on Vietnam, the four-tape set on The Men We Left Behind, the four-tape set on One Man Returned, that report entitled the Helms Committee Report, or the report of the Senate Foreign Relations Committee on the Prisoners of War, and other material in the Vietnam Special. You need to get the information. You have our permission to copy any of our four-tape sets or videos we make available, just so long as you're not making a profit on it. We need to get the information out, and we need your help doing it. We do have an interesting new video on the financial crisis. We have an interesting new video on fluoride, which I've made. You need to understand that they're poisoning our children. We do carry the book, The Fluoride Deception, and the book, Evidence of Harm, about how they've been poisoning the minds of our children with mercury. America's under attack. And as Sun Tzu said, the Chinese military philosopher, in war, to fight and conquer in all of your battles is not supreme excellence. A supreme excellence is to destroy the enemy's resistance without fighting. And so they're poisoning the children of this country with aspartame, NutraSweet, because it affects the mind, with fluoride, because it affects the mind, with mercury, because it affects the mind. Is it any wonder that when our children graduate from high school today and they're put in competitive tests with children from other countries, they can't even compete? We're, down 15 out of 16 in so many issues. These things are not happening by accident, ladies and gentlemen. We're up against organized evil. Remember our number, 1-800-544-8927, our webpage, radioliberty.com. Pray for America, pray for revival, but please pray for Radio Liberty.